opportunities and challenges. And one important deliverable from this work will be tailoring Green America's Green Gauge tool for micro-entrepreneurs and small businesses. Russ will speak a bit more about the tool shortly. Without further ado, let me introduce Kate Davenport. She directs EcoVentures Green Business and Green Jobs program. For the last 8 years, she's developed and managed programs for microenterprise capacity building projects and training for entrepreneurs and microenterprise support organizations across the U.S. and abroad. In her work, she's led both regional-based market assessments and has been instrumental in developing a toolkit to facilitate green microenterprise development. We also have on the call, as I said, Russ Gaskin from Green America. He's the chief business officer at Green America, which is a national nonprofit that for the last 20 years has been at the forefront of promoting environmental sustainability along with economic and social justice. In his work at Green America, he's responsible for the strategic direction and operations of the organization. In addition to work at Green America, Russ has served as a director and advisor for numerous beneficial ventures, including eBay's World of Good, Good Housekeeping's Green Seal of Approval, and the Star Community Index, a new and very exciting sustainability standard for cities and towns. This is only a small sample of the cutting-edge work that Russ is involved in. He also serves as a graduate student faculty advisor at Goddard College and American University. So welcome, Kate and Russ. Before I hand it over to you all, a few housekeeping things for the group. First, Kate and Russ will share their perspectives, and then we plan to open up the session for questions and discussions. But at any time during the session, if you have a question, please either raise your hand by pushing the hand raise button on your terminal, or you can type in questions directly in the chat box at the lower left-hand corner of your screen. Finally, AEO would like to gratefully acknowledge the generous support of Capital One to make this session happen, and along with other series in the sessions. So without further ado, over to you, Kate.
All right. Thank you, Tammy, and welcome, everybody. It's exciting to be presenting to the AEO community. And many of you I think I've met or interacted with before at AEO conferences or after AEO conferences. And I want to, again, thank AEO for pulling this together, and I'm also very excited to be presenting with Green America. I'm going to just go ahead and jump into the presentation. And as Tammy noted, please feel free to use your chat function in your lower left-hand corner if you have questions throughout, and I'll try to answer those questions throughout my presentation, and if I don't answer it, then we'll come to it during the question and answer period at the end of the hour. As Tammy mentioned, I'm the director of EcoVentures International's Green Business, Green Jobs program, and we work with a range of stakeholders in communities across the United States, which includes the microenterprise development community as well as economic development and workforce development, to really understand how to support the development of green jobs and the creation of green business opportunities that create healthier communities and protect our natural resources. And so in terms of our Green Business, Green Jobs program, one of the key pieces, and I'll be highlighting this throughout the presentation, is helping and facilitating the microenterprise development community to link with other partners that are popping up into our communities who are also working in the green realm. And so much of this presentation that I have will be more of a look at how do we, as the microenterprise development community, link ourselves into this kind of growing green movement, and how does microenterprise link into that? So the first thing that I want to highlight is that green business creates green jobs. And I assume that many of you have heard the rhetoric and discussion and excitement around the potential of creating green jobs in our economy. There's been a fair amount of federal stimulus dollars going toward green jobs training, particularly in the energy efficiency and renewable energy realm. And one piece that we at EcoVentures and some of our other partners have started to highlight is that in order to create green jobs, we really need to also facilitate the creation of those green businesses that will be needing those folks that have been trained in green jobs training programs, and that the discussion around green business development and support has somewhat been left out of the green jobs discussion, and that our role as the microenterprise development community is very much to bring to link those two pieces together, that green jobs piece with the green business piece. And I'll just share a little anecdote. Yesterday I just connected with one of the green job training programs in Maryland who's been doing a lot of work in training folks in the construction trades and energy efficiency. And the big piece that they are seeing missing is, well, how do we help these individuals access jobs? And the biggest realization that they've had is that the job opportunities actually often lie in the microenterprise realm or the self-employment realm, and that their skills that they are not providing in the green jobs training program, such as business planning, financial management, marketing, et cetera, that without those skills, the individuals that have received training are not really getting access to the potential job opportunities. So if there's anything you walk away with today, it's that the microenterprise development community has a vital role in the creation of green jobs and that we support those green businesses that lead to those green jobs. Now, one question that I get a lot in my work is, why are we talking about green in relation to microenterprise? And the first thing that I really want to highlight is that green opportunities exist in all sectors of our economy. And there are many different definitions of green. And I think one important thing to realize is that green is not just related to solar panels and windmills or energy efficiency. It's more a set of principles and way of looking at the world and our economy that relates to every type of business that we have. So whether you're working with a daycare center, or you're working with farmers, or you're working with construction, people in the construction trades, green is something that relates to what they do. And different sectors of our economy are embracing green in different ways, but really this is something that relates to every single type of business and every type of sector that we interact with, and that's incredibly important. I think many of us are starting to wonder, how do we incorporate green into our programs and services that we provide to the microenterprise community? And I would really encourage all of us to be engaged in a dialogue to understand that this is a concept that really links to all of our clients and all of the individuals that we work with. So in looking at why is it important for microenterprise to think about green, I think there are two overriding reasons. And one is accessing markets and revenue growth. And you'll see examples of this later in my presentation as well as in what Russ will be talking about. But there are many examples of microenterprises out there that have accessed new markets and increased their revenue by incorporating green into their practices, into the development of their products and services, and that those markets and those demand, that demand for green products and services is ever-growing. And the second reason is decreased costs through implementing green practices. There's been a perception, I think, for a very long time that green equals more expensive, but there are increasingly innovative examples of where implementing green practices and maybe around energy efficiency or waste management is actually resulting in cost savings. So on both ends of the bottom line, there are opportunities for microenterprise in the green realm. And getting into that, that idea of accessing markets and revenue growth, this is actually a statistic that comes from Green America, which is Russ's organization. But green-minded consumers put $230 billion into the economy each year, and those numbers are growing. I'm going to say that again, $230 billion. This is no longer just a little niche market, but a market that is growing and infiltrating into the mainstream. And I think that the microenterprise community really needs to understand that because there are many opportunities for microenterprise to tap into that growing demand. This is another statistic that links into, again, that there's accessing markets and opportunities for revenue growth. More than one quarter of U.S. consumers state that they do not buy green products because they aren't available where they shop, and among those who look for green products regularly, only half find them. And I think this is a really interesting statistic in that there is that consumer demand and there is an untapped consumer demand that is somewhat low-hanging fruit, meaning that a lot of our microenterprise clients have opportunities to link into that demand, but they need help in developing their marketing message and understanding how to access those markets, how to access those networks that can link them to those markets. And I think much of our role as microenterprise development practitioners is trying to understand where is this green consumer demand in our communities and how do we help link our clients to that demand. If more than one quarter of U.S. consumers want to buy green products but they don't know, they aren't available where they shop, then we need to tell them where they're available and that microenterprise can offer those products and services. This, I think, is a really important point, and unfortunately we only have an hour, so we can't dig into all the nuances of this, but what is green business? And I think green means different things to many different people, and it means different things to different audiences and consumers. And green also has specific definitions for specific sectors, industries, and business types. So what is happening in green in terms of the construction industry is somewhat different than what is happening in green in terms of food. What is happening in terms of green in terms of the cleaning industry is somewhat different, and there are nuances that are different. So for those of you that feel overwhelmed by the term green, I think you rightfully are overwhelmed. I continue to be overwhelmed by it. And I think in dealing with feeling of being overwhelmed, it's important to look at what is green meaning to the different consumer groups that our clients interact with and the different industries within which that they interact. And the third point on this slide is that authenticity is vital. There is a lot of noise around green. The use of the word natural and eco-friendly has increased tremendously. I'm sure many of you have walked into your grocery store recently and seen a number of products that used to have the word green on them now have the word green. Does that mean that product is really green? So there's a lot of discussion and concern and energy around what does green mean. And in terms of that authenticity, it is somewhat of a complex thing, and I think that authenticity links back again to how are different industries and sectors and business types defining green, how are different consumers wanting to see how green is defined. Rob and I see your comment there, and I'm going to kind of get to that a little bit later, if that's okay. Here I have a slide of some of the key green principles, and I'm going to emphasize the word principles here. Again, there is no official definition of green. There are different communities that have defined what green means for them. There are different sectors and certifications that have defined green, but there is no, for example, federal standard that says this is what green means. And I think that's important for us to understand as we're dealing with our clients. There are a lot of nuances here. But in general, green does link to several different principles. And the first that you'll see here relates to energy conservation, efficiency, and application of renewable energy technology, so decreasing our energy use, which relates to fossil fuels and climate change. The second is waste reduction, reuse, and recycling. I don't have the numbers right here, but as for some of you may have been in some of my other presentations, will know that a large amount of our waste goes to landfills, and a large amount of that waste actually has the potential to be repurposed and to be reused. In fact, oftentimes one business's waste is another business's raw material. And as a society, we have typically not created the structures in order to reuse that waste. Another key principle centers around water reduction, reuse, and recycling. A fourth is around transportation. As many of you know, green relates to use of fossil fuels, gasoline, et cetera. So reducing our transportation needs is key in terms of some of these green principles. Responsible procurement. Number six is support of the local economy. Seven, fair and equitable employment and wages, which links to the social piece of green. Green principles often do not just have to do with environmental responsibility, but also social responsibility. Pollution prevention, natural habitat protection, community stewardship and giving. And the last principle I have on here is healthy. And Russ will get into this more in his presentation, but a lot of the principles and demand for green products and services relates to not only a desire to protect our natural environment and preserve our natural resources, but also to us as individuals, that we want access to more healthy products and services, such as organic food, local healthy food, paint that doesn't have harmful chemicals in it, wood that doesn't off-gas harmful chemicals. So that link between our desire as individuals for healthy products and services and our desires as individuals to be responsibly procuring products and services is very much linked. And there can be a lot more discussion around these green principles, but I have this slide here just as a kind of a guide to help us realize that green really does not just have to do with solar panels and windmills, but has to do with a lot of factors that intersect with our economy and our society. And I see here, I'm going to address one of the questions that just came up, which is there a regulated definition of organic? And I'm going to link back this question to kind of an overall concept here. As I mentioned before, there are many different sectors that are beginning to move in the direction of green, and there are different certifications and kind of regulations within those sectors of what green means. In the food industry and the agricultural industry, organic is a regulated definition by the USDA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture. You cannot use the word organic unless you receive certification by a third party that your product is organic. Organic is one of the only certifications that is regulated by the federal government. So to answer your question, yes, it is a regulated definition. No one can just place the word organic onto a product without going through that certification process. Now, in contrast to that, anybody can place the word natural on a product. There is no regulated process around the use of the word natural. So that's just an example of the nuances that are popping up around use of different green terms. The other point I'd like to say about organic is that organic is one type of certification that relates to the agricultural and food sector. There are other certifications that have popped up that relate to green and sustainable principles in terms of the production of food. And some of these have to do, some of these have different components than organic. There are consumers that want just organic, and there are consumers that are looking for other types of certification, such as there's a certification called Certified Naturally Grown. There are a lot of nuances around certifications and what's regulated and who is it regulated by, and perhaps this is a topic that we could address in later AEO presentations, and getting into more of the nuances around different certifications and terms. But the overall point is that there are a lot of terms being used, and some are regulated and some are not, and therefore it is incredibly important for us to understand for our clients what are the sectors that they are operating in and what are the terms and definitions that are regulated or not regulated in those sectors. I'm going to speed it up just a little bit here because I only have about 10 minutes left in my presentation and I want to get to a few more points. I touched on this in the beginning of when I started speaking. I think as a result of the kind of growth and interest in green, there are tremendous more allies that we as practitioners can start linking to. And these are allies that can provide new types of technical assistance to microenterprise clients, new types of financing that's focused on green. And some examples of these types of new allies and the work that we all do is, for example, regional green business networks. As well as sector-specific green initiatives. There are sector-specific green initiatives related to hospitals, schools and universities, municipalities, their industry initiatives, their manufacturing initiatives that have to do with green. And all of these initiatives present opportunities for us to provide new types of assistance to the entrepreneurs that we work with. And I'm going to give some examples of these. In the Bay Area in California is the Bay Area Green Business Program, which serves small to medium-sized businesses in the 9 Bay Area counties. And they have created their own green standards for businesses related to auto services, printing, hotels, restaurants, landscape design, and a few others that you see on this slide. I've also provided a link at the bottom. And this is an example of a regional green business network. And if you're working with clients in the Bay Area, this is the type of new ally that you should be linking with in terms of helping your clients access new markets. because the Bay Area Green Business Program has already created standards around green, it would be important, for example, if you were in that area, to think about what is our role as a microenterprise development organization. Since there's already a green business regional network, perhaps our role is not to develop a standard or a certification, but to simply link our clients to this new market. And for example, this Bay Area Green Business Program not only provides services in terms of certification for their businesses, but it's also a directory for local consumers and local businesses to find small businesses in the area that provide green products and services. Another example here is the Green Chamber of the South. They are headquartered in Atlanta, Georgia, but they operate around the entire Southeast. And they function much as a typical chamber of commerce, although they have a focus on green. And they provide all types of technical assistance and access to markets. In fact, right now, they're doing a business incubator program for several small businesses in the Atlanta metro area in terms of accessing green markets and building their green business plans. So this is, again, an example of a new ally for us to be linking with. The Green Chamber of the South is also working with Georgia Green Loans, who is an AEO member, who is linked to the microenterprise development community that has developed specific loan products for the development of green business. Another example here is something, this is also in California, it's called the Stop Waste Partnership in Alameda County. And they provide on-site free technical assistance for businesses to find ways to save money and improve the environment through their waste management, looking at repurposing waste, recycling, organics waste management. And they offer grants, loans, and financial assistance to help those businesses implement some of those practices. So again, here is another type of partner that if you're in this area would make sense to link with and link your microenterprise clients to. Another example I have here is the Maryland Healthy Hospital Initiative, who we actually work with a fair amount in the Maryland area. They are working with about 90% of the hospitals across the state of Maryland to help those hospitals implement sustainability and green practices. Everything from environmentally friendly pest management to purchasing and procurement of local food to organic waste management and recycling to green and health, more environmentally responsible cleaning services. So what we have been doing in conjunction with some of the microenterprise development organizations in Maryland is working with the Maryland Healthy Hospital Initiative. Excuse me. There was a little bit of a technical difficulty there. We've been working with the Maryland Healthy Hospital Initiative to say, if hospitals are looking for green products and services and helping themselves go green, where are the opportunities for local microenterprises to help provide those services? And those are in the areas, again, environmentally friendly pest management. So we worked with an integrated pest management company to help access this new market of hospitals that want environmentally friendly pest management services. We're working with the initiative to help link farmers to hospitals to supply them with local food. So this has been a key type of new partnership for the microenterprise development community to really find opportunities to help their clients access new markets. So those are just a couple examples. There are many more examples of new types of allies in the space of microenterprise development. One thing that I'd really like to highlight here is that microenterprise, by the nature of being local, has an added advantage in terms of the green market. Much of the demand for green products and services across sectors and industries obviously relates to how is that product or service have an environmental impact in terms of energy, waste, water, pollution, and there's more and more interest in purchasing from local businesses because there is decreased transportation costs related, and because purchasing from a local business helps support the local economy and help create jobs, which links to that green principle of community stewardship. So by the nature of being a local microenterprise, you often have an added advantage in accessing some of these new green markets. And that's the case, for example, with the Maryland Healthy Hospital Initiative. Hospitals are saying, we not only want to purchase green cleaning products, but we want to look first at businesses in the local area that provide green cleaning products, because then we're helping to support the local economy. So by the nature of being small and locally based, a microenterprise can often have an added advantage in terms of accessing some of these markets. And I think that's something that's really important for us to realize for all of our clients. I'm going to transition here quickly in the last few minutes to talk about not just the access to markets opportunities, but some of the green cost savings, and try to debunk that myth of green costs more. I'm just going to give some very specific nitty-gritty examples, but I find that these examples often are an eye-opener. A crack as small as 1/16th of an inch around a window frame can let in as much cold air as leaving the window open 3 inches. Sealing and insulating ducts can improve the efficiency of your heating and cooling system by as much as 20%. Now, what that means is that if you're a small business with a facility, you need to look at insulating and energy efficiency, because that could result in 20% reduction in your energy bill. And all of us know from working with microenterprise entrepreneurs that, you know, 20% savings on your energy bill can have a real impact on your bottom line and result in your ability to maybe invest in other areas of the business. And there are increasingly more and more programs that are helping small businesses be able to find the financing to afford doing new insulation, insulating ducts or sealing windows. Georgia Green Loan is an example of those, and there are many others across the country. This is a term that I think is really sticks in people's mind, and I would guess that a lot of you may get off of this presentation and remember this term, but vampire power. Vampire power has been on the rise during the past decade, and vampire power is related to those rechargeable gadgets like cell phone chargers that we leave in our sockets, computers that we leave on overnight, TVs, the TV that has a little LED red light. All of that actually uses power even when it's off. And about approximately 5% of our energy use in the United States is vampire power, related to appliances plugged in that we're not using. And so here's a really simple example of where a business can go around their facility and say, where do I have things plugged in that I'm not really using? Or putting things onto a power strip so that you can turn the power strip off at night so that you're not sucking that vampire power. So again, they're really simple things that businesses can do to help bring down their energy costs and obviously then have an environmental impact. And here are just a couple examples of some businesses across the country that have implemented green practices and seen some return on their bottom line. Brentwood Royal Cleaners, which is a dry cleaning service in Santa Monica, uses liquid CO2 cleaning processes, reusable bamboo hangers, and reusable garment bags that reduce waste. They also did some renovation costs to some of their machinery, which was at about $150,000 per machine, and they're seeing a yearly cost savings of $2,500 annually just from the upgrade to the machines alone. Those other bullet points you see above were changes that they made that has resulted in them being able to access new markets for clients that are interested in having a green cleaning service or green dry cleaning service. The last example I have here is Hart's Nursery, who replaced its inefficient old boiler with two new energy-efficient condensing boilers, and they're getting a savings of $19,000 a year. Now, they applied for and received an incentive from the USDA's Energy Grant Program and also received an Oregon Business Energy Tax Credit. So they've had a payback of 4 years for that investment. So, again, there is huge potential in terms of cost savings, and there are programs out there and opportunities out there to help finance the initial cost of those upgrades. There's a lot more to discuss around that, and I think part of our objective in working with AAO and Green America is coming up with tools for all of you to figure out how to link our entrepreneurs to all of these resources that are out there. So I am exactly right on the dot, finished at the time that I was supposed to, which is kind of amazing. I presented a lot of material here to you guys, and there's a lot more to talk about, but I hope that this has given somewhat of an overview of kind of how what's happening in the green space and how it relates to microenterprise. So I'm going to pass this over to Russ, and then we'll take questions at the end.
Thank you, Kate, and thank you to AEO, Connie and Tammy, especially for inviting us in this. And I'm going to say a little bit about Green America, and I'm particularly going to focus on strategies for microenterprises to access green markets. And as I was looking through some of the registration information, as you registered, folks put in a particular interest that you had in this webinar. And I have to say there was a lot of diversity in that list. So I have a couple of things before I jump in. One is just a caveat that we're not going to be able to address all of the particular issues that folks talked about. There were examples around interest in specific green markets, financing, green microenterprise, market access strategies I will talk about, measuring the opportunity. I think at the end when Tammy talks about the project that the three organizations are working on together, she'll address that. Second, I'm going to sometimes talk about things that aren't on the slide that you're looking at because I want to adapt a little bit on the fly to some of the needs and interests that people expressed. And finally, I'm going to go pretty quickly through my slides because I think we'll be able to have a pretty good discussion to address some of the interests during that discussion. And I understand, and maybe Tammy will confirm this, that AEO may be starting some kind of online discussion around green. So there'll be more opportunities to collaborate and discuss some of the specific interests folks have. So Green America has for about 27 years carried a vision of creating a world where everyone has enough. So we're very much about economic opportunity and economic inclusion. We're about healthy and safe communities, and we're an environmental organization. So the key message there is when we talk about green, it's a very broad definition. So it includes environmental factors, but also includes social factors, up to and including supply chain and procurement, labor practices and supply chain, business involvement and community, fair labor practices, et cetera. Within that, we're very much an economic strategies organization. So we work with businesses, consumers, investors, all in those roles in terms of advancing green initiatives. So we're very much about growing a green economy. When we started, it was about movement building because we didn't have words like green economy or green business or socially responsible or whatever. And so we really were gathering together the consumers and the investors and the businesses around the country who had some interest in these kinds of values and building alternative markets. And basically just did what at that time we called movement building because it was clear that we needed to kind of bring like-minded people together who thought, the economy's has to be about more than just money. It has to integrate these other considerations. And then through the 90s, we really did more of what we called market mobilization. So focusing on particular markets like fair trade and social investing and renewable energy and organizing consumers, investors, and businesses to build those markets so they would reach some kind of tipping point. And now all those markets I just mentioned are at somewhere between 3% and 11% of penetration into their primary markets. So, for example, when we talk about organic now, organic has, I would say, is at or reaching a tipping point where it's becoming very mainstream. Folks who never thought of organic before, who had stereotypes of organic as inferior products, are now starting to seek out organic. So now we're in a phase of our work as an organization that's really about scale and platforms. So I'll talk about one of the platforms, GreenGage, which Tammy mentioned earlier, and if we have time, talk about a couple of other opportunities that I think might be particularly relevant for the work of folks on this call. We have a green business program called Green Business Network that we started in 1992 has about 4,500 businesses. And so one piece of context here is we tend not to work with the businesses that are starting out in green. We tend to, in our business network, we tend to work with those who have really adopted green as central to their businesses. So the nice thing is we've heard a lot of those stories about, you know, I started as a regular kind of business and I really got the green bug and, you know, converted my entire business to fair trade or redid the whole environmental practices and policies of my company or whatever. So that's where our experience comes from in this. And as businesses joined the Green Business Network over the years, we screened each one of them. So we realized a couple of years ago we'd screened about 7,000 businesses for their social and environmental practices, and again, on all these dimensions. So we had developed quite a repertoire of, you know, things that worked, things that didn't work, you know, what were kind of the emerging practices, et cetera. And that's part of what's informing the presentation today is the experience that we've gained from that. I'm going to skip ahead here a little bit in the interest of time. And I want to jump into market access challenges. So what are the blockages that we've seen when businesses say, boy, it was really tough to develop this market or whatever. One of the things we hear in those conversations is it's hard to reach beyond their local or niche markets. So that's one of the things that we were focusing on was, you know, a company that wanted to distribute green products and they were located in West Texas. And so they really needed, strategies for accessing a more national market. Green businesses or businesses interested in doing more green selling, for example, have certainly started to use the internet, but as we all know, the internet is full of noise. So unless you're doing, you know, all the kind of social network promotion and search engine optimization, et cetera, it's really not a great place to differentiate yourself. It's just another kind of channel, but a noisy channel. And nearly every market is extremely competitive, especially in this economy. As we know, you know, folks are starting up more micro-enterprises and sometimes entering spaces that might be somewhat crowded in their local areas. So the need for differentiation and, to distinguish themselves among consumers is increasing. And so there's this question of how do we get above the noise and get products and services in front of responsive consumers. And part of what we've discovered is green can be a real differentiator, and it's an increasingly important differentiator. So let's talk about some of the strategies for capitalizing on that differentiation by being green and positioning businesses for green markets. So strategy number one I call walk and talk green. It's kind of one of the core, first steps when we want to talk to green consumers is you have to be green. Like green consumers, which is a big segment, but they tend to be followers rather than leaders in the green space, they're pretty light in their analysis of green claims. So they tend to kind of take things like natural or whatever at face value. There's some research that indicates that it is affecting their choices and increasingly affects their choices, but they're not really skeptical in their consideration of green claims. Deep green consumers tend to be opinion leaders. They tend to be the mavens in this market. So they like to talk to other people about green claims and good green products, et cetera. And they are skeptical. And as Kate mentioned earlier, authenticity is very important to these folks. So they tend to look behind the claims and kind of take the claims apart and see if there's real substance there. And another thing about the deep green consumers is they can also be vengeful. So they don't like businesses that try to fool them. Again, authenticity is important. So if you try to fool these green consumers, it can be very damaging to reputation. So as these businesses are starting out and wanting to access green markets, it's really important to be transparent, to be authentic, and to be doing these things that are real, not just kind of putting out the, you know, don't let the claims get ahead of the actions, but really walk the talk. So some of those key practices are printing on recycled paper with soy inks, recycling office paper and materials, avoiding using recycled materials, packaging, etc. Particularly on these practices, where the consumer experiences it. So if I'm sending you something and it's full of polystyrene peanuts, that speaks volumes compared to any claim that I make on my website or catalog or in my promotional materials. And I'll talk a little bit more about some of these others, like avoiding toxins, et cetera. But the point is, the core green consumers really want to see the business behind the product or service walking the talk. So as these businesses are adopting these practices, it's also important to start talking about them. So, you know, where it's a real practice, don't just walk it, but talk it. If you do print marketing, for example, including business cards, et cetera, don't just print it on recycled paper with, you know, soy inks, but print something on the card that says 100% post-consumer paper printed with soy inks or whatever, so that people, you know, you're really capitalizing on the good work that you're doing as a business. And there are more here. Again, this the whole presentation will be available afterwards, so I'm not going to touch on every point. Finally, for businesses that are interested in accessing a green market, there are a couple of things that make for more strategic moves. And the first one is to really focus on greening the aspect of your business that's most core to your business, that's most core to your identity. So if you have a cleaning service and you want to access the green market, first step is green your cleaning supplies. Recycled paper, et cetera, all that is really ancillary to your core product or service and the green attributes of it, and that's the first thing that the green consumer, especially the core green consumer, is going to look at. Part of that is because the research on green consumer preferences clearly shows that there's a bias, and it basically starts from, you know, my body out to the world. So green consumers, both light green and deep green, tend to be most concerned about things that they eat, things that touch their bodies, like clothing, you know, lotions, etc. And so it's no mistake that you go into, say, a health food store or Whole Foods or whatever, and they have all of these, you know, in addition to all the organic foods, they have all of these, you know, toxin-free lotions and body care products, etc. So they tend to start, you know, with health and diet, and then they're concerned about homes. So, you know, I'm interested in organic bedding, et cetera. And then they're interested in communities and then the world. The deep green consumers, those tend to be a little bit more kind of equal in terms of consideration. For lighter green consumers, definitely the focus is more on the kind of personal health and safety. So I'm going to take a little break here from talking about the strategies. But one of the things we've discovered is that when we're talking to small businesses that don't live and breathe green, and as I said, we had also realized a couple years ago that we had screened so many businesses and had such a pool of expertise here, we decided there was a need for a tool. We're calling this tool that we're developing Green Gauge. And what it's designed to address is that these small business owners are busy running their businesses. If we know anything about these folks, we know that they're busy. We also know that there's a growing interest and concern around green, around sustainability, and, you know, to the extent that some businesses are not doing green things, a sense that they might be missing out on something or feeling like they're going to get passed by in the market. But what's challenging for them is they're not quite sure where to start. And even if they figure out a good place to start, they're often not quite sure or don't have an efficient way to implement sustainability programs. So this is an online tool we're developing to basically help businesses through a simple assessment process say, okay, well, where do I start? What's most important? What's going to provide the highest return financially and environmentally and socially, if that's a concern of mine? Then what we do is, based on that assessment, we give clear project prioritization. So, you know, if you said financial return is most important to you, which most small businesses probably will, it's going to, up at the top of the list of projects is going to be those projects that have a really strong financial return, like a quick payback period, maybe smaller investment, et cetera. And then basically project manage them or literally walk them through task by task to realizing those benefits and completing those projects. And then finally, as they've been doing this, we're obviously, as they're using the tool, tracking their performance, and so creates a really easy way to do reporting to customers and to stakeholders around the green things that they're doing. So this is kind of what we're envisioning as a one-stop shop for small businesses to get their hands around sustainability and really start implementing on it. These are the key areas or categories of projects that would be in this tool. And as part of this partnership here among our three organizations, we're really looking to measure the opportunity in green, not just in market access, but in the operational dimension. And GreenGage will be one way to help businesses realize that, but we're hoping that intermediary organizations, you know, that we can support them with consulting and resources to basically push out really accessible, usable information to these micro-enterprises so that they have what they need to start executing. So we don't know quite what a program looks like, but the pilot project is to really map this opportunity and figure out where the best leverage is for helping these micro-enterprises capitalize on green. So I'm going to jump ahead here and go to strategy number two. There we go. Strategy number two is get labeled. Because of the rapid emergence of green claims, in fact, it was just a few months ago in March of this year that the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office classified green as a merely descriptive term. So basically what that means is, in fact, they were so overwhelmed with applications for trademarks that included the term green, it became obvious that green is here, it's here to stay, and it's no longer kind of a unique identifier for businesses. So it becomes increasingly important for businesses that want to play in the space to get some kind of third-party certification or verification of their claims, especially those claims that are more core to their business, because again, that's the kind of strategic priority for businesses. Certifications definitely boost confidence and trust. There's plenty of research to support that. Also, you have to be somewhat skeptical of them as a business looking at which ones to use, because some are clearly more recognized and trusted than others. With green consumers, particularly deep green consumers, the stronger certifications or trust marks are kind of like a backstage pass. So you get access and you kind of open up the conversation. They're still going to be skeptical, so all the other things I mentioned before are important in terms of transparency and authenticity. Unfortunately, many aren't affordable to micro-enterprises, but micro-enterprises can capitalize on labels by using certified products. So, for example, I could use certified organic, or I could use cleaning products, you know, that are, that carry various certifications, for example. This is an area, as Kate mentioned, that's not regulated, so it's very important. And there's one particular website, ecolabeling.org, where a company can go and read about different kinds of labels and certifications and get some more kind of background on which ones might be best for them. Here are a few of those. These are some of the more commonly seen ones in the U.S. at least. So on strategy three, it's really sell green, and this is really about, okay, I'm not really selling green yet. I don't think I really have green customers, et cetera, although I'm hearing from some of my customers that they would like some of this stuff. So this is really about, you know, how do I find a product or service that fits with what I'm doing, or how do I create a business around a product or service and match it up with the green market. First, this is interesting. eBay actually just realized that they did some market research, and they were surprised to find that they didn't have a really strong reputation as a green center of green commerce. In fact, they were ranked lower than some other e-commerce sites in terms of the perception of green, in spite of the fact that most of the products sold on eBay are actually, you know, previously owned products. So some businesses have been green for decades or for centuries. So shoe repair, engine repair, et cetera, all that can be really kind of respun into new green language. You know, again, you need to make sure that you fit the new definition of green if you're doing that. So, for example, engine repair, are you recycling oil, et cetera? Shoe repair, what are the tanning agents used in the leather, et cetera? But many of these businesses don't realize that with some slight repositioning, they can really be positioning themselves far better for green consumers. And another one is environmental products or services. That one I think is kind of obvious. Again, things that touch the body or involve health and safety are key to all kinds of green consumers. So that's a framework for looking at businesses that are involved in cleaning services, clothing and textiles. Childcare is another one. You don't see very many childcare companies, even though some use green cleaners or even have organic foods, especially some of the cooperative ones. You see very little of, say, childcare providers capitalizing on opportunities for green and really differentiating their business as the choice for green parents. Third category under the strategy of selling green is handcrafted artisanal items. These, not because they're inherently green necessarily, but the research clearly indicates that they tend to appeal to green consumers. So that's, you know, again, it's no accident that you walk into Whole Foods and you see lots and lots of specialty items, you know, artisanal ingredients and handmade food products, et cetera. Jewelry is another big one. I think it's a crowded category, but there's always room for innovation in jewelry. Arts and crafts and home decor. These folks are looking for the real, so green consumers are also very interested in knowing the people behind the product. Who made this product? Where did it come from, et cetera? And then gifts is another key area. And then obviously products and services that save money, you know, that are environmental, kind of inherent kind of environmental qualities that also save money are a no-brainer for all kinds of green consumers. So these are some key green channels. I'm going to jump ahead here in the interest of time. This will be in the presentation, and we can have more discussion about this later. I'll just point people to, if you're interested, you can visit our website at www.greenbusinessnetwork.org. That's for our business program specifically. Or go to www.greenamerica.org if you want to learn more about Green America's general work. If folks are interested in reaching me, I'll chat my contact information on the webinar here. And thank you. I'm going to turn it over to Tammy now.
Thank you, Russ. Thank you, Kate. At this point, we're going to open up the phones for people to ask questions. What we would ask is if you could identify yourself and your organization and ask your question, we will do that. We have a first question that came in over the transom from Robin Finney, Robin Finney Granston, and she asks, how do we successfully insert the green concept into a business plan writing program? Kate?
Yeah, sure. I'll take a first stab at this, and Russ, if you have anything to add. I would go back actually to what Russ said a few slides back in terms of how does a business look at approaching this green concept, and the first piece is what's their core identity, what's their core product or service, and then evaluating what's the environmental and social impact of that product and service, and how can they green that product and service. Is in terms of if you are developing a business plan competition yourself or a business plan structure, is to first and foremost include in there a section in which the person that's writing the business plan, the entrepreneur, is thinking about how their product or service relates to green. And you could go back to some of those green principles that I highlighted in my slide, or some of the principles that Russ highlighted. You know, how does their product or service relate to energy use, to waste, what kind of waste comes from their product or service in the process of developing that, in terms of transportation, et cetera. So I would really focus around it in terms of their core identity, as Russ said. And then the second place where you could look at it is in terms of where can they find cost savings in terms of their operations, in terms of energy use, waste, et cetera. But there definitely need to be some guiding questions within the business plan structure, again, around core identity and some of those key green principles. I wouldn't just say, how is your business green? I think there needs to kind of be some guiding principles.
Yeah, I would just add to that. I think there's an opportunity there, especially if you use templates. Because the green dimension can be used as an overlay in all the aspects of the business, and you really do want that theme to be congruent. So if it's in the operations and it's in the product or service and it's in the market plan, you know, then there's a, you know, it runs throughout the business. So a good template, I think, would be to really look at every dimension of the business and add on a green lens, assuming that green isn't just core to the business plan. But if you're talking about just an ordinary business and they want to capitalize on green opportunity, it'd be interesting to have a template that really asks questions for each part of the plan that get the green thinking into it.
I would add one other thing there, which is I think this has been touched on repeatedly, I think, throughout both Russ and my presentation, but particularly in terms of the marketing and the identifying your market niches and your access to market channels, that section of the business plan, it's really important for that business to understand what's happening in terms of my markets and green. You know, if they're a farmer growing chard and collards, let's say, you know, who are the markets and how are those markets thinking about green? Is there increased demand for organic or local? So really looking at the specific sector or business type that they have and giving them questions that help them analyze how is their specific market looking at this concept of green. You know, if they're a cleaning service, then they should be thinking about how is my residential market for cleaning services looking at this green piece, which relates to the use of green cleaning products, et cetera.
So So we have a second question from Joseph Morse. Kate, you mentioned a little bit about Georgia green lending, but can you touch more on green lending in general?
Yeah, sure. There are multiple different green lending programs that have popped up across the country. Georgia Green Loans has two components to it. The first is a kind of general green business lending product, which essentially they've asked for businesses who have a green product or service that are applicable for their kind of general green business loan. So it's like any other microenterprise loan, but there's just kind of a green lens on it, and they've put green questions into the loan application. It's a little bit more general, and it's asking for businesses that have a kind of green lens to specifically apply for that, and then they assess how green that business is. The second product that they have relates specifically around energy efficiency, and this product is still in development, although there are some other business loan products across the country that have also been doing this, looking specifically at energy efficiency, which doesn't relate to necessarily a green business that's selling a green product or service. But what Georgia Green Loans is doing, as well as, for example, New Resources Bank in the Bay Area, as well as some folks, Shore Bank up in the northwest part of the United States, they're developing a loan product in which, let's say, a business wants to re-insulate their facility. They can get a loan for that re-insulation, and then the monthly repayment of that loan is tied to the energy cost savings that they get from the re-insulation, for example. So what you see happening in the green lending space are two things. One, which is general green business loans that are kind of asking for that green lens, and then there's very specific green products, particularly around energy efficiency or waste. So again, for example, the Stop Waste Initiative in Alameda County in California has a business loan product that specifically relates to waste. So you're seeing it kind of both being topic specific and more general.
I am mindful of time, and unfortunately I don't think we're going to be able to open the lines for general questions. That said, we hope that this is the start of a dialogue among a community of interested microenterprise practitioners in green, and we invite folks to engage in some very specific next steps over the next few months. First, as Russ mentioned, we will be creating an online community of green microenterprise folks. You will receive an invitation to join that dialogue over the coming week or two. We will also be reaching out to folks to understand more specifically what kinds of issues you have and where you would like to have that group go. Second, in the early fall, microenterprise development organizations will receive a survey from AEO Green America and EcoVentures. We hope that you'll participate and encourage your peers to participate. And finally, related to that, we encourage you to engage your clients. There will be opportunities to engage businesses in the pilot program. As Russ described, the Green Gauge tool will need organizations, businesses willing to engage in that program, so we'll reach out afterwards. Both the presentation from Kate and Russ will be available on the AEO website. We can also send it out to people who participated in this group, and of course the audio for the call will be available for rebroadcast as well. We thank everyone for participating. We look forward to engaging with you going forward. Thank you very much to Kate and to Russ and to your respective organizations, EcoVentures and Green America. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Please stand by.